Okay, start over.
But we can't say it. Talk about that. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
How you doing? This is Steve Miller, better known as Kelly's dad, marketing gunslinger. I am right next to me.
Yeah.
On this screen is my extremely good friend, extremely smart guy, Mr. David Mayo Loomis.
Hello.
For those of you who are watching.
Hello, everyone. Wow, I can do There's that too.
Book.
Look,
there's his
check
book.
It out.
We look
can
at that.
Both hold two, up my book at the same time.
There are two copies of his book on the screen right now.
It's
and
crazy.
Marketing is everything we do. And welcome to the B2B Marketing and Sales Podcast. That just rolls off my tongue.
It really does. It really does. Yeah. You know, someday this podcast is going to be in virtual reality, and Steve and I are going to be sitting around together, not just remote, doing this together.
We'll be holograms together.
We will. Not halfograms, holograms.
We will be the whole, yeah.
The whole thing.
It's spelled W-H-O-L-A.
Exactly, exactly. So what's going on, Steve?
You know, I was on LinkedIn the other day, and
never,
you know,
heard of it.
I
need to get a LinkedIn
account.
I need to get set up.
Here was a very interesting coincidence, because I ran across this one post.
Okay.
And there was a guy who was commenting. He didn't write the post, but he was commenting on this post.
Who would that have been?
Who sounded and looked suspiciously like you.
Okay.
And the post was about a Japanese philosophy,
okay,
called Ikigai.
Ikigai,
yeah. And if I'm not pronouncing it correctly, don't comment. I'm not interested. All right. Ikigai is spelled I-K-I-G-A-I. Ikigai. You thought that was a really interesting topic that this guy was writing about, right?
I actually did.
So tell us what this person posted, and what was it about the conversation about Ikigai that caused you to comment? Because you seem pretty up on that.
Yeah, from your understanding, just before we go further, what do you think? What's your understanding of the translation of that term?
Okay. Well, see, I have to see now. I have to admit to everybody that I used to work for a Japanese company.
Okay. No, go ahead.
And,
go ahead. Let's hear it.
And
Let's
I was I was at the end of my career with them. I was the highest ranking non-Japanese in the company, and I was their vice president of international sales and marketing.
Okay.
We were the world's largest manufacturer of radio control.
Toys and things like
but
that.
Very high quality.
So, yes. You knew
so
about
Ikigai. Ikigai was a part of the conversation.
Yeah,
and essentially what I would say to you to answer your question about what do I think it means is that it means to set a goal of achieving happiness.
Yeah, I think that's I've seen a whole bunch of different when I saw this post, it really caught my attention, and so I've done some research on it. I have a book downloaded about it, but I haven't read it yet, to be honest with you. But mm-hmm. I've seen different sort of translations of that word. Reason for being.
Yeah, reason for being. That's actually a better way of putting it.
Reason for being. And what I've heard is that it can be applied to a person and thinking about yourself individually. And then I've seen articles and people weighing in about, can you apply this to your company?
Mm-hmm.
And and how that can be. So essentially, the reason why it caught my attention was, and I still have not seen anyone attribute this. And this has been around for a long time, right? I'm taking
the, well, you're, you know, is, you know, when I was when I was working for this company, we're talking about 1980.
So it predates Good to Great, is what you're saying?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so if anybody's listening and they know Good to Great, which is an excellent book, probably outdated now, but the concept is real and valid. There's something he calls the hedgehog, the author calls the hedgehog, and it's three intersecting circles.
Mm-hmm.
And the three intersecting circles are, what am I passionate about? What am I best about? And what drives my economic engine? And then you're supposed to look at the intersection of those things and say, oh, you know, that's what I should do. That's my hedgehog. And the reason why it's called a hedgehog is because it's hedgehogs. Defensive system, they do one thing. They don't do many things. They don't have a lot of strategies. They have one strategy.
Right.
So I've been a huge, huge believer
you
of
said
this.
You said three rings.
Three. Yeah, just three. There's three. Exactly. That's what
I can't hear. I can't hear
good
you.
Is in Good to Great. Exactly. And then I saw this Ikigai and I saw the same three rings, basically, with a fourth, right? So there's different sort of translations of the four rings, but they're four intersecting rings. Hello?
I can't hear you.
You can't hear me?
I you just stopped.
Why?
A couple minutes ago.
Why?
I don't see what... Did I hit a button?
I don't know. I haven't changed anything. All my stuff is...
I don't see anything.
I'm still working on my same microphone and my same everything.
Is there something else I can help with?
Yes, you can. You can help...
Siri,
you can help Steve
away.
Hear me.
Okay.
Yeah, I cannot hear anything.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no, there you are.
You can hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. You're frozen.
I am? Oh.
Yeah.
Jeez, what's going on here today?
I don't know.
All right. So that was weird. Because you had just started talking about the three circles.
Okay. Do you want me to start over?
No. Here, yeah. All I'm going to do is say, hey, we had a little technical glitch. All right. You know, my buddy was starting to talk about these three circles. We're going to take it over, start over from that spot. Go.
Okay. Good to Great has three interlocking circles. What are you passionate about? What are you best at? And what drives your economic engine? And the intersection is what you should focus on. And that's your hedgehog. And they call it a hedgehog because it's a singular strategy, because the actual hedgehog in nature has one strategy of defense, which is to roll up in a ball. Mm-hmm. So we're not saying that's your strategy. That should probably not the best business strategy to roll up in a ball. But the point is, that's what you should be doing. And I was just amazed because I saw this Ikigai and I saw... it was those same three, and
plus
now
one.
It makes me wonder where he got those.
Plus one
and
more.
Plus one more. Plus one more. And the plus one more is basically, what does the world need?
Yep. How are you helping the world?
How are you helping the world? And so there's four interlocking circles, and you have to look for something at the intersection of all four of those. And I've seen all sorts of really cool diagrams since, you know, like learning about this.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them just have the four interlocking circles. Some of them look at when you do four interlocking circles, it makes little sections
Right.
And if you only have three, but not the fourth, then there's something wrong. Like there's a lack, like in your life. Like you have all the others, but you can't make any money, or you have all the others, but you're not fulfilled. Like there's something missing. And actually, is it good for the world? Does it help? Like that is a very, very cool addition to me to this. And I it resonated with me. It's why I downloaded the book to read. And so this is new to me. There's people that have probably been studying this philosophy for who knows, centuries.
Yeah, a long time.
For all I know.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah. And I just think it's a very, very cool thing. And also it's the absolute right strategy for every person in every company.
Yeah.
How could it not be? How could it not be?
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's basically, it starts with the philosophy that everything is organic. And that,
say more about that. Everything is organic.
Well, in other words, everything is they're living. Okay. And, you know, originally it was taught to humans as this is the way you should go out into the world. This is what you focus on. You know, you focus on the four things and you look for, and you're going to intersect a couple, you know, some, you know, two of them might intersect with each other. So, you know, so, for example, you know, like what are you good at? And then, like, what is your passion?
Yeah. Right. Sure. And, a couple of those,
you know, you know, so you can have those connections, like you were saying, but if you really want to have life fulfillment, you're going to want to have all four, and then they come together, like you say, smaller intersections, and then ultimately the smallest intersection of all four. Okay. And then you are at a, in many, Asian cultures, you know, they're saying it's kind of like you've now reached bliss.
Yeah, nirvana. So question or comment. One thing I saw was that that in Japan, there's certain pockets of either like communities or areas where people live a really, really long time. And apparently they follow this philosophy. And did you know in Japanese, there's no like comparable word to retire like we do in the US? Like, oh, it's 65. I'm going to retire now. I'm no longer going to work. If you actually find that intersection of those four things, you want to stay busy. You want to keep working because that's what gets you up in the morning.
Right. You want to stay in that intersection.
Yeah. Nothing against golf. And I don't want to, I'm not, but all not I'm me. Saying is
not me.
Right. I mean, you're going to retire and play pickleball for the rest of your existence.
Not me.
Probably not.
Yeah.
How good is that for the world?
Yeah. And, you know, so, and the reason why I said it's organic, you know, everything is organic, but even a business is organic, because business is just a collection of people, you know, who are working together towards a mutually agreed to goal.
Yes. Okay?
So it's very easy to actually translate this, you know, towards, you know, the culture of your business, running your business, that, you know, it works very neatly with the Ikigai philosophy.
It really does. Some people have said that, like, Steve Jobs probably followed something like that, that, you know, of course, Apple is held up, you know, as an example in so many things, and it's a little bit overdone. But But when you think about Steve Jobs, I mean, people don't, you know, unless you've really read about him and studied him, you don't really realize that he, you know, did, you know, study a lot of Buddhism and other philosophies. And he was looking for something that made himself happy. Some ikigai people or coaches I've read suggest that you find your passion area first. Like, it's easy to say, okay, oh, those four intersecting things. Okay, great. Go for it. Find that. Well, wait, how? Like, which first? And they said, well, Steve Jobs said, like, he wanted to create, like, simple, beautiful things. And then he figured out a way to do that using a company. Mm-hmm. First, it was Apple. It was Pixar. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are other things that he touched that were that reflected that. And I don't know. I think that's really cool. And even Simon Sinek, who, you know, everybody looks at that video and says, you know, why, you know, the why of what you're doing. But the point is, like, do you have an extra motivation behind what you're doing that's bigger than you?
You know, and I think that, so when I was working for Shinsei, I mean, it wasn't like it was pushed on us all the time, but it was there. I mean, it was certainly part of the culture. And the way that I saw it at that time, was that the first thing that we wanted to do was figure out what we were good at. What we were good at. Because that's like, finding out what is your aptitude? What are your aptitudes? Because for the most part, you know, if we're good at something, that tends to be something that we become passionate about.
Do you remember, like, how and when that concept was actually introduced to you, like, in a corporate setting? Do you have any memory of that?
Not really. But I'm kind of getting to a point that did happen.
Okay.
And that was that, you know, they always talked about, you know, the bosses and the board of directors would always talk in terms of okay, we are really, really good at designing radio control toys. That's what we're really, really good at designing that and producing that. Okay. What is it that we really want to do that we would really love to do? And they say, okay, it's to provide happiness for young people, you know, around the world. It was that. And then the question was, okay, now how do we use that and make money? Right. And then from there we went to the now, and then how do we, once we're getting all these things going, how do we help the world? And but then they threw in a curveball. So and the curveball
was it a fifth circle?
I hesitate to say that it could be a fifth circle, but there is another philosophy, or I don't say philosophy. I think it's just a way of thinking and a way of planning your life and stuff like that. The term is atarime hinshitsu. Atarime hinshitsu. So atarime. A-T-A-R-I-M-A-E, and then Hinshitsu, H-I-N-S-H-I-T-S-U, Atarime Hinshitsu. And what that basically means is everything does what it's supposed to do.
Like the natural order.
The way my bosses were looking at it was that it was that everything when we make something, it does what it's supposed to do. Okay. And you know, and it's quality. That's a big part of this, is that quality is always built in, because if we're telling a kid he's going to be able to take this toy and he can drive this little small replica of a off-road vehicle, you know, around in his backyard, that thing will be an off-road vehicle in his backyard.
It'll hold up. It won't break. It's doing what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, it's doing what it's supposed to do. But then they applied it to like everything and details and stuff. And I remember the first time it really kind of resonated for me was when we were at an automobile manufacturer and walking through and stuff. And I don't know if it was Toyota, but it was a high-end, I don't remember who it was, but they brought up the term Atarimain Shitsu, yeah, as being part of their
the auto manufacturer did?
Yes, the auto manufacturer. Hmm. The conversation was around Ikigai. To them it was, this is what makes the world better. All right? And is this, you know, because the way they showed it to us was, they said, okay, you know, in very, very simple terms, all right, that everything behaves the way it's supposed to behave, but it's also incongruence. It's congruent with everything else on the vehicle. So think about it, and what they would, and the way they demonstrated it to me was, they said, okay, when you lock the door, you know, and this was before the automatic locks and stuff, you know, but when you lock the door, the pressure of you pushing down on the lock, that the pressure on that is the same exact pressure as it would be for when you push the button to turn the radio on. Or when you reached up and you moved the lever that started your windshield wipers. Or when you turned your lights on.
Wow. It's almost,
every single one of them had the exact same.
It sounds a little OCD to me.
Well, but that's what they call it. That's how they looked at it, as that this is the passion that we have, is that this is going to make the world better, because then when people buy a car.
How interesting.
Everything about the car, you know, is congruent.
I think what triggered in my mind was, I was thinking that you were going to say, like, okay, we designed or conceived of this car to be a entry level car, and therefore everything about it has to be consistent with entry level car. Like, it has to be. And all the costs and everything about it has to be aligned. Like, that's not different than Michael Porter and what his strategy, and how he, you know, called out at the time, long, long ago, when Southwest Airlines started, and Southwest said, look, we're a low cost airline. Okay. And so all of their things they had, he called it a thicket of activities that were all aligned. In other words, they only had the same planes, the exact same planes, not now, but Southwest originally had only one kind of plane. And why? Because then they only had those parts. They only had those mechanics that knew how to do that.
And every single pilot could fly every single plane.
Exactly. So all of those things, I mean, there were hundreds of them that added up. And maybe that was Ikigai. Maybe it was your
Atarimain Shitsu.
Atarimain Shitsu.
Defined it. They defined what it was going to be.
Yeah.
And everything, and it worked the way it was supposed to work.
Hmm. Somebody has to decide how something is supposed to work, though, right? Like, there's a conception.
Yeah.
Initially,
I think I think also in a large part with these companies, because they are so they're fixed on these four things from the Ikigai. And then on top of that, they say, but whatever we build has to do its job. Okay.
So it might be a fifth circle or like a phantom fifth circle. Yeah. So are there companies still in Japan that are still using this? And you think they're still sitting around talking about Ikigai?
I'm going to say no. And the reason why I say no is because so much of Japan is not what it was when I was working for Japan.
But this is not that long ago. And this is like a deterioration of a very cool cultural thing. That I don't like that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you because like back in, you know, in the 80s when I was working for these guys, you know,
I mean,
they never fired anybody.
That's not long ago.
They did not fire anybody.
They didn't?
No, they would not fire anybody. People would not quit, and they would not fire people. But
is that good practice?
It worked great for them for many years.
Well, it made hiring very important, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, of course it did. Yeah, of course it did. And made education very important. You know, because if you wanted your children to, this is where, you know, you saw this in Asian countries, not just Japan, but where, you know, the kids were, I don't want to say trained harshly, educated harshly, but the expectations were extremely high from the kids because how they did in their education, how they performed compared to everybody else dictated where they would go to work and dictated what they would be doing. And that's what they would be doing for the rest of their lives.
That's fascinating. And I've seen that too. I also read a lot of Japanese literature, like fiction also, but that comes across definitely in that. And having been to China, like hearing and seeing some of that and hearing about the school system and how that works.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, testing at different levels.
Testing at different levels. And when they take the test, then
there's a bifurcation. It's so interesting because, you know, we're the land of, pioneers in the U.S., right? So we're so liberal, actually, compared to everything else. And we're explorers and we're risk takers. And people here cannot do well in school and still, like, you know, found a .com company and make them, you know, $1 billion if they're smart or clever or do the right thing, or maybe they're following Ikigai without knowing it, or knowing it. But it is different. And boy, I don't know. Like, I do feel like we have lost our philosophy footing in the U.S. And that philosophy footing that we're talking about Ikigai and Japan and all that, you know, set aside all the pressure on kids and all that, but that was good. And that had to have been good.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree. And I think that, I'll go back to the very beginning of our conversation was, you know, what was Ikigai all about? You know, it's all about, follow your passion, follow your bliss.
Boy, I don't know. I can't even think of a philosophical, like foundational thing that we even teach in the U.S. necessarily to our you know, kids coming up, or, you know, or kids, like even good colleges know that people are going to graduate and are going to have to get a job, but we don't really teach anything about ethics or what's going to happen when we get out there,
right,
in the quote unquote real world. It's just,
and we don't talk about find your passion and see the thing about, like, the thing that I love about and it was cool to see when you brought Ikigai, when I saw you, you know, talking about Ikigai on LinkedIn, you know, it was like, oh my gosh, I remember this.
Because, yeah, brought that back.
Because this idea of, see, like, for, you know, when Kay and I started doing, when we were started speaking and consulting for companies, but in particular, the speaking part, you know, that, you know, when, you know, people will come to, would come after I, you know, got success doing that, you know, I was approached by people all the time. Like, how can I be a speaker? How can I, you know, do this? Or somebody would say to me, you know, I am really good at sewing and collecting coins. How can I create a career out of that? I'm going, so that's, you know, in so many words, I would say, so that's your passion. Yes, that's my passion. And I'd say, well, don't quit your day job. Because remember, one of the four parts is, how do you make money?
Exactly.
Right. And so if that's going to be, it has to be part of this, and it's an equal part.
Right. And are you making the, and are you, you know, is it good for the world?
And is it good for the world?
I think there's synergy between these things too, because
yeah,
I feel like if something's good for the world, then people recognize that.
And yeah,
they will gravitate towards it.
But it won't. But there are so many examples that you can pull out where it's like, oh, this is really great for the world, but nobody's going to pay for it.
Right, like a really small video cassette.
Right. Yeah, it was before its time.
Yeah, a small video cassette that Steve's dad invented. but and I invented something called the 9-track tape. It was long ago. I was a kid, and I'm like, you know what? Yeah. I think it was after I watched the movie Spinal Tap, and I saw that this one goes to 11.
This one goes to 11.
You know, I'm like, why 8 tracks? Why can't there be 9? And it just never went anywhere.
No. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry, but
it never went anywhere. And, you know, it just didn't have all four parts of the Ikigai.
Yeah. And I think the idea of Atari Made in Shitsu, where it's that everything does what it's supposed to do, I think that applies equally to people in a corporation. Okay. And that's what makes a corporation hum, is that everybody is doing what it's supposed to be doing. Every person is doing what he or she is supposed to be doing. See, you know, and what do we have right now? We have quiet quitting. You know, we have TV shows and movies that feature employees who do everything that they can to not do their job.
Yeah, and we have the whole pandemic and work from home was happening already, but, you know, the pandemic brought that on, and now a struggle to try and figure out what that balance is, is a real, real issue, for sure. So I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, I think, I'm all for, you know, doing what you love, doing what revs you up. I love that idea. But just make sure that there's a way for you to make a living off of that. You know, make sure that you're doing something that it's not just about you.
Right, right. And also, you know, the other thing that when you said like everybody's doing their part, like if you've studied bees, you know, I was joking with my wife the other day that I said, what if the cruel irony would be that actually humans are the least intelligent of species on Earth. And what we think of as the least intelligent is actually the most intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if that turned out to be the case?
Yeah.
Because there are other creatures on this earth that are more cooperative for a common goal than we are.
Yeah.
And we can certainly learn from that. You know, we have soccer that we call the beautiful game, football to others. We have a game of baseball is just such a perfect example of, you know, if everybody is doing their job, it goes really, really well.
Exactly right.
Really, really well. Right. You don't even have to be an absolute superstar in any one of those positions. But if you do it competently.
When Vince Lombardi.
As a team.
Yeah. When Vince Lombardi was coaching the Green Bay Packers, you know, he would start every first practice day. He would stand in front of everybody and he would hold up a football and he would say, "Gentlemen, this is a football." And he said, "And that's where we start." Okay. You know, and every year he would say, "We are not going to have a ton of plays. For the most part, our opponents are going to know the play that we are going to run."
A jet sweep?
Yeah. Student body right. You know, stuff like that. And he'd say, "But we will be so good that they can't stop us. Even when they know what we're going to do."
Exactly. Wow. This has been great talking about all this. It's inspired me to learn more about the Ikigai and others, some of these other Japanese philosophies and other, we got a lot to learn, folks.
Yeah. And I'll make sure I put the, I've got, you know, not just Ikigai, but also the Tarime and Shitsu.
Please do.
In the show notes so that you can,
please do
if you want. And, you know, maybe if I can find somewhere to, some type of a resource that you could look at, or read a little bit more about this stuff. But, you said it earlier, you know, good to great. That's what he was talking about. Good to great. You know, yes. Getting the right people on the bus.
Right.
In the right seats. So that if each person that's on that bus belongs there, and if they do what they're supposed to do, we all win.
Wow. I mean, we could talk about this forever. But let's wrap it up for this time.
Let's wrap it up. Mr. Voice, I did not call you Mr. Voice before. I'm sorry. We were deep in
discussion. That's all right. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for the B2B Marketing and Sales Podcast. That's right. Oh, my gosh. Thank you for joining us. I'm Michael Barbaro, and this is... Why does Michael Barbaro talk like that?
I don't know.
Why does he talk like...
He's practiced like that for years.
It's almost like he's scared. Like, this is a secret newscast. And you're...
Don't let people know.
We're going out of here. Thank you for joining us for this epic episode, I would say. And we will see you next time on the B2B Marketing Sales Podcast with Steve Miller, not the rock star, Kelly's dad, marketing gunslinger.
That's enough.
All sorts of other things.
Also, this guy,
David
Mayo Loomis.
All right, folks. Bye bye.